You're listening to Sunnyside Up, a B2B podcast that brings you the juiciest insights from go-to-market leaders and practitioners.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Sunnyside Up podcast. I'm your host, Paul Gibson, and today I'm excited to be talking to Carol Howley about building a brand through customer relationships. Carol, in case you don't know her, she's the CMO at Exclaimer, which is an email signature software platform company. Carol's a senior leader backed by over 15 years in the digital and technology space, combination of both established businesses and startups. She comes from a background in product marketing, brand development, demand generation. And Carol is hugely passionate about building strategy, storytelling, bringing products to life for consumers, and above all, driving growth. From building the first intelligent customer journeys at a global hotel brand, scaling the business marketing function from zero to hero for Skyscanner, and also managing a global demand for a leading pre-IPO software giant, Carol's got a proven track record in engaging with businesses, developing key stakeholder relationships, managing budgets, and leading teams to realize their full potential. So Carol, really excited to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for the introduction. I feel a bit embarrassed now after reading all of that, but no, thank you so much and for the introduction. I'm absolutely delighted to be here and a really kind of avid fan of the show as well. So it's definitely a huge honor for me.
Oh, that's great. Great to hear. So we'll kick off straight away, get into it. So as a starter, if you don't mind, it'd be really good just to hear how you initially got interested in marketing as a profession and what it was particularly that attracted you to your current role where you are at Exclaimer.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. I guess for me, I've always been really fascinated, I suppose, by the psychology behind marketing and I guess the rationale why people do things and why they buy things. And, you know, at university, my dissertation was all about kind of, you know, the whole use of kind of persuasion and tactics within marketing and really starting trying to understand how that could and should be used and also manipulated. And that kind of really, I guess, was kind of the really sparking of the interest and why I decided doing a, you know, business and languages degree. Actually, I wanted to go into marketing over and above any other area. So I think for me, it's like this amazing blend of like being really, really creative, being quite strategic. You obviously, I think increasingly as a CMO are responsible for, you know, the growth of the whole business and marketing's involved in like every stage of the customer journey, but also in the employer brand, in how the company works, how you liaise across departments, internal communication and external. So it's such a fascinating role that, you know, also plays, you know, in the sort of inside and outside of the business for me. And I guess I'm not the best, I always say, on data. I do love data. I love insights. I love interrogating things and making informed decisions. But it was definitely an area for me that I knew, as much as I loved it, you know, I was never had the best skills or the best spreadsheet skills. So for me, it's kind of just that real balance of having great skills in the creativity and the data side and being able to really leverage them.
Excellent. Yeah, that's brilliant. And it's interesting, actually. I think the way data's going now and AI and platforms out there, it sort of takes the shackles off a bit for marketers. They don't have to spend all that time doing admin and building out these data spreadsheets and things. You can actually start utilizing it and putting your creative juices to their best. So
no,
yeah,
definitely. I understand that. No, I was I actually kind of did a bit of work with them. So the founder of a company I worked for, it was a sort of SaaS BI data platform, and they had a no-code lab, and it was kind of the first time I really thought through, you know, the amazing thing that no-code tools actually do to unlock things for marketers and for people who necessarily can't code or build HTML. We went through a big phase at Skyscanner actually where a lot of the marketers became what we kind of labeled growth hackers. It wasn't really, but we tried to learn to code. We tried to do, you know, change some basic colors on websites and how fascinating the coding language is. But actually having no-code tools that you can plug in and using all the different tools where you can connect your tools together, it's just, it really opens up the opportunities and, you know, enables you to do so much and visualize so many things that you couldn't do before.
Yeah, and rather than being in that siloed position of having one bit of data, you can now bring all those data sets together. So yeah, it's definitely a changing world for the better, I think.
Absolutely.
I think that's excellent. So moving things forward a little bit then, so from, could you mind sharing some of the key challenges you might have experienced as you transition to, I suppose, a more customer-centric approach, and how, from your experience, are the best ways to overcome these things?
Yeah, of course. I think really being customer-centric really has to be like a business belief. It has to be something that the whole company buys into, because, you know, it's almost like it's that massive cultural shift where, you know, you have to align like the processes, the systems, the approaches, how people think, believe what they say and they do, because, and also break down those silos between departments, because the customer doesn't care that, you know, you come in on a marketing piece of activity, then get chucked over the fence to sales and then chucked to customer success. And then you bounce around all these different departments. Like, that doesn't actually matter. They want, you know, instant answers. They want the best service. They want everything instantly. You know, they want to be treated like they're special. They want you to understand them, to know them, you know everything that they want, because we've all got Netflix and we're all used to being served everything we expect. So, you know, it's this kind of incredible shift that you have to go through as a business to kind of prioritize actually what the customer experience is the most important thing. And then how do you work that back into your business to make sure that you're driving growth? And also there's a huge flip in the sense of, like, rather than actually, like, we need to drive growth and then we'll worry about the customers, it's like, actually, if we're bringing them on, how do we kind of make that journey the best possible to turn them into hopefully advocates and hopefully people that would recommend you and need reviews on review sites and have kind of a part of your business. So for us, it was like, I think the biggest thing was that initial cultural shift. Then there's the whole collaboration challenge of working across departments and especially bringing all the different teams together and just getting everyone to think, actually, rather than us, it's all about them. They're the first priority. And then I think the final thing was actually the technical elements of joining that up, especially when you know, often you have legacy systems, you have things that don't quite function, and making those changes and prioritizing that over and above something that maybe works, but it doesn't function for your customers. So they were kind of the key elements for us, I think. And then it's just kind of like, actually, how do we measure that? Like, what's the important thing to sort of stay on top of? We look at things like our NPS growth, our review scores, you know, satisfaction levels. We've also just launched a load of advisory boards, which is something I've done before, but we've got a marketer advisory board, and I was honestly amazed, because within the first sort of week, we had almost 100 people sign up to be a part of it, which is things like beta testing, giving us feedback, coming to events, you know, actually asking for our opinions on things. And, you know, generally customers can be quite passive unless there's a problem, but, you know, people actually genuinely were like, hey, we'd actually like to talk to you. And we want to be involved. We want to give our opinions, which for me was just absolutely the icing on the cake that people were really, really voluntarily involved. So for us, that's sort of the best thing.
Yeah, and it's great. And I think customers appreciate that, because they know that the reason you're asking is you want to make things better for them and mm-hmm. and their peers. So I think that's really positive. And it's interesting you talk about the different roles and collaborating between teams, because a lot of the discussions we have is around aligning, particularly sales and marketing, because if they're going off and doing different things, you're going to end up with the wrong results for the business. So you mentioned the importance of understanding other roles in the business. So what were some of the key insights the teams gained from the process, and has it really helped the collaboration within your business?
Yeah, definitely. I think for us, the biggest thing was when I started in the business, I'd worked previously with OKRs, and we hadn't, that wasn't a thing in Exclaimer. And one of the big things with OKRs, when you try and do them properly, I wouldn't say we've got the best version yet. I think you're learning every time you do your OKRs every quarter almost. But, you know, it's actually starting to then think, you know, if all of our objectives tie up to, you know, a certain few business objectives, how do we do that? And there's almost nothing you can do in marketing unless you're dependent on sales for the overall sales. You're dependent on product for the quality of the product, no matter how great your marketing and sales teams are. If the product doesn't fit, then, you know, obviously you've got nothing. And then the customer success. So we kind of feel our go-to-market team has to be incredibly aligned to make sure that actually, if we're all aiming for customer-centric growth, what does that actually mean across the business? And what do I need to do? And how do the sales team need to act? And what resources do they need? And then what's that kind of next step in terms of that journey? So having this really robust cross-departmental structure alignment, and then all of us saying, actually, how do we measure it, and holding each other to account? So if our NPS goes down, like, why is it going down? How's that feedback loop going back into the rest of the business? So I think for us as a marketing team, you're always in the heart of things. So you're ready for that collaboration element, but selling it into other departments who have very, very strong goals. Often with sales teams, you know, they have a huge number on their head, almost more directly sometimes than marketing. So it's making sure that you can help them understand, enable them to do their jobs better. And then they can actually see, you know, across the business, you know, how that works. Another thing we recently did, we worked with a company that was recommended to us through Pavilion, actually. And they're the Arbinger Institute, and they do a huge amount of work with people around how do you turn your chair and understand more about other people, and what's that kind of actual reality of assuming positive intent, because you go to work and finance chucks back your invoice and everyone's like, oh, for God's sake, that team, and you kind of automatically get into that approach. And it's actually, it was really good for all of our teams to sit there at our sales kickoff this year and kind of have the facilitator go through and say, actually, what did you do and what did you think and how did your actions kind of create their reaction, and how do we all kind of turn our chairs, understand each other's roles, get to know, each other's departments and just work together a lot better. So I think it's kind of, getting everyone at every level of the business to really understand those kind of symbiotic roles and how we can all work together. And then, for me, I guess a C-level, obviously, my team's kind of the wider sort of C-suite. It's making sure we're all aligned, we're all happy in agreement, building those relationships, obviously building a great relationship with your CEO and your CFO to make sure you've got the money, but ensuring that actually the sales leaders bought in, that they're really positive and, pushing the marketing activities so that their team's bought in. It's everyone kind of together working off the same hymn sheet, I suppose.
Yeah, great points there. And I think it's interesting, actually, because we have a lot of conversations with sales leaders and invariably it's, oh, we don't think marketing are delivering the right things for us, et cetera, et cetera. But that is often because they're not, to your point, working in the same direction on the same things. And it works down the line as well, right? If you're as a marketing team, provide an opportunity that goes into pipeline that isn't a great fit, sales will work it. Maybe they'll be frustrated, but more often than not, they won't go anywhere, and that will create maybe a negative effect on things like close rates. But it can be worse than that, because if they do close it, maybe that's a deal that you're handing over to the post-sale team, but it's highly unlikely ever to get to value. The customer's not going to be happy. The people looking after them aren't going to be happy. And ultimately, they probably won't renew. And so getting that alignment right at the beginning and making sure everyone's going in the same direction is very important. So really useful insight there. Digging a bit deeper, Carol, into the main topic here, how are you able to balance investing in the brand awareness that's so important while also driving demand through your marketing funnel?
Yeah, and it's a kind of an interesting debate, probably as age old, of like the sales and marketing kind of debate, in the sense of, how much do you invest, and when you're scaling a business, what's kind of your key channels and how do you prioritize? Because obviously none of us have, infinite budgets, unfortunately. And it would appear that, growing a business is seemingly a kind of, I guess it's a more challenging game every year, it seems. Or certainly in my area of work, it feels like, you look around at the research in terms of like buyer committees, the amount of people involved in a deal, the amount of time it takes to close deals, all the elements kind of point to not necessarily a slowdown, because I think people are still buying, but they're far more like critically evaluating, like, do we need this tool? Is it a part of my stack? Is it going to be, the right thing for me? Is it something that's going to evolve in the next few years, because things are changing so quickly? Our investors actually just recently put a piece of advice of like, actually don't sign long-term contracts, because surely that tool is going to be replaced in 6 months by something that uses AI better or has a different roadmap or, delivers that. So they're like, you do want to be, really evaluating effectively. So I think what you need to do is sort of take that customer-centric approach, but also invest in your brand. And I think a second kind of trend that we're seeing is around kind of, I guess, that shift in all of those trends and the way people are buying and behaving means that they actually, they actually want to buy from people they trust. They're doing all that research. They're, looking through your content. I think the latest status was 80 or 90% through of a way through the buyer journey before they even reach out to a brand, before they actually start that interaction, before we know they're in market. And while we all know that there's like 2 to 5% of people in market at any time, but if they've already made that decision, which is based on a brand, it's based on the people they can find, it's based on the reviews that they read about that brand on the site, the recommendations they find, you've got to actually really kind of, there's a lot of things within that that help you make that argument into the business, because often brand is that last sort of investment. It's the one that you have to argue the investment with people, and also if you're an investor-backed company, doing a rebrand isn't always an easy thing to do. So it's kind of making sure that you really can look at all the elements that lead people up to buying from you, and also kind of making sure you can track it. So I think for us, I always say to my team, like, we invest 60% of our budget and, our kind of time and focus on really, really that kind of demand gen, which isn't just, you know, it is linked to brand and its awareness, but it's really making sure that we're creating demand, that we're capturing it, we're really targeting our personas, our pain points, you know, making sure we're articulating our product. And then we spend kind of like 30 to 40% on more of that awareness element to bring the new people for the future into the market. So we're always kind of working on almost two fronts to make sure that we're in market now, we're operating as, you know, as close to possible in personalization and focusing on people. And then the other thing is like, you know, how do we really kind of keep that conversation around the value of your brand, your email, your signature, you know, and where our product is kind of hoping and seeing the kind of industry leading. So yeah, it's a hugely interesting thing. And I've also just done some research, or there was some research sort of recently, I think it was about a year ago, that our investors did that we were a part of, that kind of says, you know, actually, if you're scaling a business, I think something like 100% of people have, you know, SEO, they've got content, they've got, you know, webinars and things happening. And it's like, what else do you do to stand out when everyone's doing the same things? And not investing in that brand really is a huge mistake, because you're not, you know, people aren't sort of seeing that, they aren't trusting it, and they aren't relying on you. So yeah, I think it's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, really good points there. A couple of really interesting things. One is, I think COVID made a huge difference to the buying journey. Yeah. Right? So much more of the stuff is done digitally. And as you said, people don't come to your website till right to the end. And if you haven't got your brand out to that business, they may never come. And we can't sit there crossing our fingers and hoping that they find us and come, you know, we've got to find a way of getting out in front of them. And so that understanding, that's a company we should be investing in, get our brand out in front of them, is really important. And the other one that we're hearing a lot is that, you know, we all know that times have got tough over the last couple of years. The economy's a bit tougher, so budgets are being cut, and brand awareness is really important, but it's getting the brand out in front of the companies that matter. And if I sell to banks and financial institutions, is there really any benefit in you know, trying to raise my brand with French Connection? Because they're not a good fit and I can never sell to them. So there's, yeah, lots of interesting topics we could dig into from what you were talking about today. But yes. So one thing I think that's really interesting is that, you know, a lot of marketers are under pressure. You know, budgets do get cut and heads get cut in difficult times. And a lot of marketers seem to be struggling to demonstrate their value to the business. I think maybe they've relied too long on things like anonymous click-through rates as a way of saying their marketing is successful, which in a B2B world is very difficult. So from your perspective, what metrics are you finding most useful in measuring the impact of your brand building efforts and then proving your value back to the business?
No, definitely. And I think for us, I mean, obviously we look at a huge range of metrics. We kind of rely on what we basically call like a more of a brand impact score, but that kind of has lots of things laddering into it. And for us is really, really important. So it's things like, you know, our brand awareness. So we look at, you know, obviously our share of voice, our social kind of channel traffic, our social engagement, especially the engagement with our content. You know, it's fine if you put content out there, but if no one's reading it or spending time on it or enjoying it, you know, you're not getting any good feedback on it, then obviously it's kind of a waste of everyone's time, let's be honest. So, you know, we look at the engagement elements of all of those channels. So, you know, we look at, you know, obviously our web traffic and overall elements. So we do look at a huge amount around those kind of awareness and all the channels coming in. We do take a measure for what we see from that of, like, you know, brand sentiment. And within that, we're kind of looking at, you know, I guess, what are people saying about us online? What's kind of the review site saying? We don't really, as our kind of category or area, have necessarily an analyst kind of quadrant or anything like that. But we have a huge presence on kind of the software review sites, you know, whether it's Capterra or SourceForge and G2. So we're able to kind of really start to measure, you know, are people happy? We obviously do an NPS score on all of our customers. And also we like to do it on people who interact with us. So if, you know, if possible, we always kind of ask within, you know, the experience of dealing with us, the experience of working with our sales and customer teams as well. So we get a nice view across the business of people's kind of sentiment. And we also kind of like measure things. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I haven't mentioned actually. I think they're the main things. It's like, you know, really the sort of like web traffic, engagement metrics, social media, obviously our NPS, the reach and engagement of all of those activities. So it's really kind of tracking all of those. We also like to look at things like, you know, our scores across different elements, our employee ratings, all of that side, because I guess ultimately, you know, your employees are the front face of the brand, are the people who represent you every day. So it's really making sure that A, they're happy, but also that's kind of in place too. So, you know, a huge amount for brand building. And I think when you've got that, it does, you know, you can't track everything, and there are some elements that are kind of almost immeasurable, but there are some things that you can see coming through into business and pipeline, and you know, don't necessarily do a lot of brand for that, but you can really start to see that kind of almost correlated growth. And I think it's really important to I guess assess against, if you spend money on a campaign, the second you stop spending money on that particular lead gen campaign, it drops off. So you've kind of got like a almost like a finite number of hits with that campaign. Whereas if you're building for the longer term, you know, you're establishing that protective moat. You're really starting to get things like pricing power. You're building up, you know, your employee advocacy, other advocacy partnerships within the industry, because people will want to work with you because you stand for something, you stand out. So, you know, actually measuring a lot of those elements are really, really important too, which are arguably to a degree intangible, but you can put metrics in place to get a really good view and a good pulse check, I think. So that's really important. And I think for us, one of the main reasons we're investing in, I guess, brand and trying to measure it is because we kind of see for the future, as I'm sure everyone, you know, you can't go to a podcast without measuring AI, let's be honest. But, you know, when you do have a robust brand identity, you do stand out. And it means that when, you know, even when AI is sifting through content, it can see quality, it can see links, it can see trustworthy elements, it can see that you're rated on review sites. You know, as it starts to kind of read through different party content elements, you're starting to sort of see that actually, if we align closely with what the audience is seeking, but also we've got good referenceability across different sites, reviews, you know, in the press, different backlinks, etc., that's a really, really important element to actually sort of say, we'll start to show up in those search results, which, let's be honest, not all of us know where search and AI and all of that thing is going to end up by the end of this year. So it's going to be fascinating. But for me, it's an investment in actually making sure that you are found going forward and you are kind of top of mind, or at least trustworthy and recommended within that area.
Yeah, and I think that's sometimes undervalued, especially like from a sales perspective.
Yeah.
We, you know, as a salesperson, we pick up a lead and we go for it, but we don't realize that the reason that company wants to talk to us is because of all the brand awareness and trust that's been built up by marketing in the interim. And you know, I only get introduced to an opportunity when it's at the right stage in the buyer journey, and that's because of the work marketing have done beforehand. So I think, yeah, sometimes we don't really give it the value we should. So
yeah.
But no, this is really, really interesting stuff. So looking ahead to 2024 and beyond, what are you most excited about in terms of expanding or maybe improving your marketing strategy? And the second part of the question, how do you plan to continue to nurture your customer relationships at scale?
So I guess on the first one, like I'm really excited about AI. We've started using a number of tools. All of my team are probably bored stiff of me going like, oh, have you seen this new thing and this new idea? And, you know, have you tried this? And have you tried building this instance? So they genuinely are bored stiff of it. But I just think it's fascinating, and the way things are going to change. So we've started using Jasper in the content team and looking at, you know, how they've actually taught it to have a like my actual tone of voice as well as our brand tone of voice. So it's quite scary getting things back in your own tone of voice, and you're just like, oh, that's a bit strange. But it's just, for me, it's absolutely fascinating. So we're looking at ways that we can utilize AI to help us scale and operate at pace, while also making sure that we're, you know, we're very mindful of being very human, making sure that it's solving a problem of speed, but not necessarily of replacing a person in that zone. And I think, you know, incredible content has such a great place, and, you know, that element of writing can never be done in a different area, but making sure that you can scale, connect things quickly, build instances, run trainings, all of those opportunities, I think, is really, really fascinating. We're working really hard on our ABM. So we are quite, I guess, a low average selling price, and we're quite high volume at Exclaimer. You know, we also appeal to everyone, really. If you're in business, then you probably send email. And if you send email, you really should make sure your brand's represented effectively with a signature. And also you could promote your brand effectively through that signature. So if we're available to anyone, then for us, you know, it's an opportunity, but also a curse. So what we've been doing is using kind of ABM-based activities, which is probably a bit more like ABM-like, because it's not in a sense of one-to-one, but it's how do we really focus on what's in market, really tailor our message to those particular verticals or those types of or groups of people, and start to be really intelligent actually where we spend our money. Because, you know, if we did spend on every possible industry vertical and company size, we'd be very, very poor very quickly. So for us, it's kind of like making sure that, you know, who are the people that are in market, who are relevant to us, who are our best kind of types of customers, where will we, you know, in terms of our priority countries, want to kind of spend that money, and making sure that we're kind of being really intelligent. So that's a fascinating area that we're getting closer and closer in terms of what we do and how we spend and how we personalize all that experience to really kind of give the customer a great experience. So that for me is fascinating. And I guess another area that we have done quite a bit of, we've got a absolutely fabulous video editor in-house, and we're looking at actually how do we disseminate that video more effectively and really leverage that channel. So that's a really interesting area that we're focusing on. So that's probably my top three areas of interest at the minute in terms of new areas. We've got sort of a few others as well that we do, but that's the main ones I think that I'm excited by this year.
What you've already covered is really interesting, but just how are you're planning to scale and nurture your customer relationships going forward?
I guess one of them is that personalization. How can we kind of take that all the way through and actually build web pages that people land on that we've already pre-populated with their brand, with their experience. It's so much nicer that you land on, you're like, oh, that's my brand set in there with examples of, for example, healthcare companies that are like me who have the same problems and a nice customer reference story. So we're starting to kind of really leverage those customers, bring them into, the journey to make sure that people can understand that we do it, and also kind of make sure it's really personalized to people. So it's kind of really bringing everything together, I suppose, as part of that journey. So for us, that's probably a really good way as an example.
Yeah, really good. And I think there's a couple of bits in there. I mean, ABM, you mentioned, means a million different things to people. And maybe we'll do another session on that. And the AI thing, I think there's so many people seem to think that AI is going to replace people. I don't think it will. I think it will replace all the monotonous, mundane, admin-type tasks that mean people can't be as creative or as selling as they want to do. So I think actually it's going to make it better. I think it'd be a sad world if we don't have conversations like this and get people talking.
I think I saw a post recently about like this whole raft of AI podcasts that are being churned out where everyone sounds the same and they talk about the problems and give the same answers, and I hadn't really heard about it before, even considered it, but it was fascinating to kind of think that that's where it could go. But I completely agree. I think having people and conversations and perspective and also difference, because if everyone looks and sounds like you and you're taught more and more to look and sound like me, then it's going to be a frightfully boring world just talking to yourself.
Yeah. absolutely. Listen, Carol, this has been really insightful, and I think we've probably opened up a conversation that could go on for another hour, but we are coming up on time for this particular one. So if you don't mind, just to finish this session off, can I ask you for a couple of recommendations? So firstly, do you have any books, blogs, newsletters you recommend that the listeners on this podcast should find out or explore further?
Yeah, when people join my team, I always suggest that they, I buy a few books for them. So I always get Radical Candor, because I think it's really important when you're in a team to actually, think through, saying what you mean, being very clear, being very upfront on everything. So I always say to people, I don't want any issues, anything's not said, I'd really like everyone just to kind of be very clear and have those conversations up front. So always buy Radical Candor. And also, I think there's a brilliant post on your site from John Miller around ABM that goes through the ages of ABM and how that's evolved and what the different areas mean. So there's sort of some really good things I always recommend people to start reading, especially as we're on that kind of ABM journey. And then in terms of podcasts, I really enjoy Marketing Against the Grain and Dave Gerhardt's. If I'm looking for any marketing advice, I'll flick through and there's always a title that I like. And I also really enjoy reading Devin Reed and Emily Kramer's newsletters. So they're two of the ones that I've signed up to most of the time. And if I'm ever wanting a non-B2B marketing activity, then I quite often listen to Diary of a CEO and just sort of flick through his interviews. Obviously some fascinating people. So I recently enjoyed the one with Mo Goddard, which is about making a billion people happy, which I think all of us could do with a bit more of, and how to really re-engineer your brain to make sure, kind of like the sort of limbic monkey brain kind of idea, and how to actually re-engineer your happiness. And actually you're the key to your own happiness. So for me, I think sometimes as well, when you're working a lot and you don't take as much sort of free time, it's actually helps you reflect and really look forward. So they're kind of things that I really enjoy at the moment.
Excellent. Some great recommendations there. Definitely worth going to have a look at. And selfishly, are there any inspirational people in the B2B space that you recommend we bring onto this podcast in the future?
Absolutely. So I did have a huge range of people, and I was thinking, obviously we're recording this now, I don't know how it'll go out, but it's actually International Women's Day shortly. So I thought that I'd actually recommend just a women only list, if that's all right with you. Great. So I don't know if you've had them on, and if you have, then I've missed them, but I really love Alina Vanderberg, who's from Chili Piper, and she gives really raw, honest interpretations of how she's obviously come into marketing and took over the sort of CMO role and recently hired someone to kind of replace herself, but really great perspective of what she's learned and how she's moved into that from a CEO perspective. And I think sometimes it helps as a marketer and a senior leader actually understand, when you understand how to explain marketing and how to position marketing and how to, you know, how actually when people are asking you what kind of silly questions, how to explain them to people, and you know how they don't have that understanding of the kind of art and science that marketing blends. So she's a really good person. I love Kathy McPhillips of the AI Institute. Obviously we're learning as much as we can in my team about AI and applying things and testing things out, so we've learned a lot from the Marketing AI Institute, and she's, you know, got some great content that she shares. And also we're investing a lot in our customers, and we've been looking at opportunities to kind of monetize customers and also leverage kind of those relationships, you know, once you build up those great relationships. And so we're starting to use a tool called User Gems. And so we've been following a lot of what Trinity Nguyen shares on in the internet, and also really like some of her perspectives on customer marketing and how important it is. So they're my three.
Awesome. Thank you. If we haven't already, I'll make sure we are reading for those and listen out for them on a future podcast. So last but not least, if any listeners want to dig deeper into any of the points that you've raised today, if you're happy to, how can people get in touch with you after this podcast?
Of course. So I'm obviously on LinkedIn under Carol Howley. So you should hopefully be able to find me. My email is carol.howley@slomo.com. And I'm on Twitter as well, if anyone wants to find me there. But yeah, anything really, if you want to reach out, I always love, as you can tell, talking about B2B marketing and brand and demand gen. It's my favorite topics. So that would be wonderful.
Brilliant. Well, thanks, Carol. That's an excellent session. Lots of food for thought. And I'm sure, as I say, there's every chance that we'd be back in touch to dig into some of this. So thanks very much for attending, Carol. Really appreciate it. And thanks everyone who listened to today's Sunny Side Up podcast. I'm sure, as Carol said, it's a series you're probably aware of. But if you haven't heard of it, definitely I recommend you explore it. There's lots of other informative interviews out there as well. But for now, thanks very much for listening. Appreciate your time and speak again soon.
Thank you.
Today's episode is made possible by Demandbase. Demandbase is smarter GTM for B2B brands to help marketing and sales teams spot the juiciest opportunities earlier and progress them faster. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Sunny Side Up. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review us and subscribe to our show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube and Demandbase TV.